What's up, everyone, and welcome to the Elevate Experience,
the podcast about overcoming struggles and adversity and how that relates to addiction, recovery, and health. I am your host and the CEO of Elevate Addiction Services, Angie Manson.
And I'm Dallas Terrell, co-host and life intervention counselor at Elevate. Thank you so much for joining us, and let's jump right in. What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we have a special guest. His name is Jordan Walls, and he is the director of our finance department. We love him. He's been a big part of the company here, and he's one of my great friends. And do you have anything you want to mention about Gordon here?
Jordan, how many nicknames do you have around here? Dallas just said about three of them right now. It's Gordon, it's Gordo, it's Jordy, it's Buddy Counselor.
I have, there's been quite a few over the years. You know, some are good, some are not.
But some appropriate, some not appropriate.
But yeah, a lot of nicknames, but it's endearing, you know.
It is. Yeah. I think that means people like you. I mean, you wouldn't have that many nicknames if people didn't feel comfortable with you.
That's what I choose to believe.
Power of choice.
That's right.
Jordan, let's talk a little bit about your role here at Elevate. Like, what do you do here currently? We're going to get into the other stuff, but currently, what are you doing?
Yeah, currently, as you mentioned, I'm the director of the finances, just basically overseeing, you know, that the money that comes in and also making sure all the bills get paid. And, you know, when you flip the switch, the lights come on, you know, we got food.
That's you,
all
huh?
of that. That's I'm making sure that the bills are paid. Yeah. And also making sure we have all the supplies we need for the clients, you know, pens and paper and supplies for the different activities that we operate, that we have here. And, you know, just making sure everything kind of runs smoothly and that the counselors can focus on their job and make sure that they have the tools they need. So a lot that goes into it, but, you know, yeah.
You make it seem seamless.
It's far from, boy. It's not one of the easiest jobs around here. Like, you have to have your eye on a thousand different things because it's a very large organization. There's a lot of moving parts. And, mm-hmm. and like you said, you have to keep your eye on every single thing. And if somebody forgets to put something in, that doesn't mean you can't not pay it because we got to keep the lights on. And so it's a lot you got to keep your eyes on.
There's a lot of moving pieces, that's for sure. Yeah. But we do our best to make it seem seamless. So
I guess I also am not on the receiving end of those calls when it's not seamless. So to me, it's just like A to B. I'm like, cool, man, there you go.
Yeah, thanks, bill comes Jordan. In, you pay it with, no big deal.
Yeah, simple, Jordan.
Just pay the bills.
Yeah, pay the bills, man.
That's right.
So you weren't always in finance.
Right. Yeah. No, when I first started, you know, what, 6.5, 7 years ago, I began as a receptionist initially.
That's right. In our admissions area.
In the admissions area. Yeah, I was in reception there for a while, you know, answering calls and then transferring to our counselors like Kevin, you know.
There we go.
You know, that way people could get the help they needed. And then transferred from that into being a group counselor for a number of years. And then...
Well, I'm going to backtrack. Before it was after, you also ran graduations. You were in the rotation of running graduations, which is one of the way more difficult things to do around here because you have to get up in front of a very large group of people and, you know, have an entire script memorized as well as things to say about the clients that are getting their certificates for completion.
Yeah. Public speaking was never a part of my past.
And new skill.
And, kind of jumping into that was nerve wracking. And I don't even remember how long exactly I did that
years.
For. Years. Yeah, it was
you
it
wanted
was a
out
number
for years,
years
and we wouldn't let you get out because you were so good at it.
As soon as he got in, he's like, I'm getting out.
Yeah, I was like, I got to find a way to get out of doing this. And every week, you know, when it was my week to run graduation, I was nervous until I stepped foot like on the stage. And then it just kind of like went into this, like, I don't know if it was like a fight or flight mechanism that I had, but it just kind of pure confront. You just got to do it. You're in front of, you know, 70 people or whatever. There's
no way out.
Yeah, you had to get in the zone.
You can't run. Yeah.
You had to get in the zone.
Exactly. Sink or swim, as I said earlier.
All right. So back to shifting gears away from the group facilitator who used to also run graduations.
Right.
What was your next track?
I transitioned from being the group facilitator into doing one-on-one counseling. And that's just kind of meeting with clients on a regular basis, you know, individually kind of to dive into some of their projects or things that they're trying to work on or, you know, clinical goals, things like that in a more intimate setting where it's not like in front of 15 other, you know, clients. It's just counselor and client, just kind of working through problems, which I really enjoyed. I liked that.
You can go a lot deeper with people right. when it's just the two of you.
Exactly. And you can, you know, you can get really specific with that client's particular case and not like, you know, a group setting where you're looking at everybody, you know, as a whole. So yeah, that was my next transition into being a one-on-one counselor.
So I guess a question I have for you is what was like your favorite part of, I guess, all of the jobs that you have, right? Like, what was your favorite part of the reception part of like that portion of your employment here? What was your favorite part?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just seeing the transformation, you know, coming from that background myself, you know, I know how difficult it is to make an actual transformation, and you can start to see it, you know, from when I was a group facilitator in the very beginning of clients' programs. Mm-hmm. And especially as a one-on-one, you know, you get assigned these clients right at the beginning of their program. And you see, you know, them kind of like in this raw form, and then to see them, you know, emceeing graduation, and I'm announcing them as a graduate of the program as a whole. Mm-hmm. And just to see that drastic difference is second to none. You know, you can't really duplicate that anywhere else to see something that drastic. You know, I think that's kind of why, you know, I've stuck around so long and why I like really enjoy, you know, doing this and working here is that exact thing, you know.
So seeing the transformation.
That transformation it's crazy to witness, you know, firsthand for sure.
Yeah, and it sounds like each kind of role you've played here, you almost get like a different insight into that transformation.
Right.
Like with reception, you're like making the connection for the transformations to happen.
Right.
It's like the start of the process before the process.
Right, exactly.
So that's kind of cool. It's cool to see kind of your involvement in getting them here to leading their groups to being their specific one-on-one counselor.
Right.
And then to now to making sure that this place is open to facilitate transformation.
Exactly. Well, and I would love to talk about that bridge. It's like, well, how does he end up over in finance if he's such a great counselor and a great one-on-one person and all that? So, you know, we had all of our staff do the Myers-Briggs test a few years ago. It was a personality test. Right. And it kind of says your strengths, your weaknesses. Are you an introvert, an extrovert? You know, are you confrontational? Are you good with numbers? Are you good at engineering? Anyway, it's just a very extensive kind of test. Right. And we had one of our very long-term staff leaving who was over finance for like 14 years. And I was like, gosh, you know, I don't know who to bring in from the outside. This is finance. It's a very trusted position. Right. I don't know anybody on our staff who's in bookkeeping or anything. Like, who am I going to put in this position? So Tom and I were having a conversation about these tests, and Jordan was one of his juniors. And he said, yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was looking through all of my juniors' aptitude tests and all these things. And Jordan's really good at numbers. And it was just an offhand comment. Oh, this guy's good at this and that guy's good at that. And this person's strength is this. And it just kind of stuck in my head. And so instantly I thought, well, what if we move Jordan over to finance? Right. He's trusted. He's been with us for many years. He doesn't have the formal training in finance, but, you know, basic math is really what you need in that position. And somebody who's got a very high IQ, which I also knew that Jordan had. And so, you know, I also knew that Jordan wanted to be able to move up in the organization. And he was, you know, sort of at a point where he's been doing this for, you know, so long that he was starting to feel like, am I ever going to be able to progress? Because Tom's not going anywhere, like, ever. So am I ever going to be able to move up? Yeah. And so, and that's where, you know, the transition happened from Jordan to finance.
Yeah. I remember the day when, you know, you texted me and was like, hey, can you stop by my office? And I was like, oh man. And I walk in and it's like you and Nate and Matt and like, you know, all the leadership, like everybody, like,
oh wow, we did that to you, huh?
Yeah. And I walk in,
you're like, I'm done for.
And then I think it was Nate probably made a comment like, he said, isn't this scary? You know, like, something like that. And I was like, oh man. you know, but it turned out to be, yeah, that was the opening in the finance office, and it was, you know, offered to me, and I was extremely excited. But yeah, walking in was a little terrifying.
We like to do that to people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all fun and games.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like being called into the principal's office. You know what I mean? It's like
to see you got on honor roll or so, you know.
Right. Yeah. 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 Exactly.
Yeah. But at first you always go to the worst place. Yeah. Like, am I getting fired? Am I getting demoted? Am I in trouble? What did I do? Your wheels are spinning.
Right. Well, especially with a past, you know, like ours and
doing
wrong things. It's not like we forgot about that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of, it brings back those old memories of like, oh crap.
Here we are again.
Yeah.
Been here before.
Face the music, you know. Yeah.
Take it on the chin. All
right. Right.
Yeah. But who knows? Look, they served you up an amazing opportunity. So like you were saying, Ange, right? How did you bridge kind of the on the ground, like physically there helping clients, like big part of your life and your purpose, and spending half a decade like counseling and being in the mud, as we would say. Mm-hmm. So how did you continue to find that purpose or reason in your life in the finance department? Because I'm sure that was two different worlds.
Completely two different worlds. And to be honest, at the very beginning, it was kind of easy, right? Because it was like this shiny object.
Right.
It's like this new thing, this new role. It's like,
which is exciting,
you know, it's exciting, right? And then you kind of get into the groove of it. And then I'm working in our finance office, which is offsite from all the clients. And you start to, you know, it's slowly but surely, like it's kind of like this huge transition.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to be honest, took a little while to kind of find that same purpose. Like I mentioned earlier, the greatest thing about, you know, working here and was seeing those transformations in person.
Right. Every day.
Every day and being a part of it. But it took some time, but I, you know, eventually like was able to see how valuable this program is, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. like coming up through my own struggles and making a transformation and helping hundreds and hundreds of clients over the years make that same transition. Realizing that like if this place wasn't here, none of this would happen. None of these, like, you wouldn't be here. We would not be making a difference, right?
For sure.
And a huge piece of making sure this is here is the finances, right?
Right.
Making sure that like I said, the bills are paid, right? Making sure things are allocated correctly so that the counselors have the tools they need to continue to counsel. And it started to become like that was kind of my purpose. Like, we can keep this operating, you know, and at this facility, for instance, we can have, I don't know exactly the number, but say 80 clients at this facility, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we could save 80 people's families and their lives and the clients and that ripple effect. What if we had two of these? That's 160 people, and the domino effect is huge. Like, just like seeing how the business end of it can really help the clients is what I was able to transition into. And it's
absolutely,
you know, been my purpose ever since.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah. I've got to imagine though. And I just know this is true. So I'm just going to, you know, lay it out there. Yeah. It's very difficult when you're in a position working with the clients, running graduation. There's a lot of thank yous, acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jordan, for my one-on-one counseling session. Thank you, Jordan, for that group. You know, you're appreciated openly very often because you're like instrumental working with the clients and helping them get through their program. And that I don't want to say people take that for granted, but it's something that you get very accustomed to. When you move to finance, people aren't thanking you. They're mad at you because you're like, where's this? Why'd you decline that? What's the holdup? You don't, you just don't go get fulfilled in the same way that you do when you're directly helping people with that transition. It's a little hard sometimes to get to that and not have that same sort of acknowledgement.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is like my position now is very behind the scenes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I come up here and none of the clients even, they're like, who is this guy? You know, new guy, he's got a employee badge on, but like, you know,
who is he? Yeah.
Who is this guy? I don't know who he is, you know. And it took some getting used to. And like you mentioned, from going from buddy counselor where everybody was, you know, kind of like, you know, graduations, you get a lot of thanks and gratitude. To being the guy sitting there that nobody even knows. It's like, he works here. I wonder what he does. It definitely was a transition. But again, it's my internal purpose is the driving force behind it all. It's not the external gratification that kind of keeps me going. It's the internal understanding. And that's what I really have to rely on, you know.
Yeah, it's part of the process.
That transition. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's so cool that you're able to like plug like your purpose into like the business, you know. It's kind of like, you know, they say if you love what you do, you never work again in your life type of thing. And that's what it sounds like you had to do, where it's like, I'm helping the reason I'm here happen.
Right.
And so I like how you internalize that a little bit. And I do admire you working through that shift, you know, because I'm sure it wasn't easy.
Right.
I mean, I put myself in your shoes and I'm like, damn, like that would be really difficult for me to do. So
yeah, I don't know if you would be a good candidate to not work personally.
Trust with the money.
just to remove yourself from that intimate working with the clients kind of setting, because that is, you're so good at it, and you get so much out of it that I couldn't imagine moving you out of that position.
Right.
Oh, well, we don't have to figure that out yet.
Yeah, you know? We don't have to figure that out. But we have moved other people, and I've seen like them almost like wilt like a flower, like they miss that. And so, you know, it's all about putting people in positions that they're going to thrive in. And so
Absolutely.
That's part of the fun and the challenge around here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a transition. But if you know, I do think if you find the right purpose, like there's a quote that I really like, and
You're going to slaughter it. Yeah.
I have the quote, but I don't know who it's by. So it's kind of like, I can't quote my sources.
I can Google it right now.
We might, but maybe we'll put it in the notes or something. But
yeah,
it says, if you have your why to live for, you could bear almost any how.
Mm-hmm.
And that quote like really sticks with me a lot, because it's all about like finding your why, finding your purpose. What is that? And if you have that, it's true and genuine. That'll carry you through. And that's what you got to find in transitioning from a role like a counselor to a role like finance, you know,
right?
For sure. So,
yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So Jordan, I want you to walk us on the path. We haven't gone this route with anyone besides Seth, and he's sort of a recent graduate and a recent trainee or new staff member. But, you know, I want our listeners to really understand like the path you've gone to be where you're at, to truly appreciate, you know, how much and how far you've come to be put in this trusted position of finance of, you know, millions of dollars from where you came from.
Right. Yeah. What a transition. the transformation is crazy. And I'm probably one of the only people in the finance world these days that has a story like mine. Yeah. I'd imagine.
For sure.
Like a very untrusted path.
Yeah, very past. Untrusted. Yeah. As I mentioned before, you know, I definitely had a rocky history in my life. I, you know, went through my own struggles with addiction. And
when did that start? So give us a little history, because it's my understanding you grew up in a nice household. It wasn't like you were from the streets. It was a nice middle class household. Mm-hmm. How did things go wrong, or where did they go wrong for you?
I middle class house. Mom and dad always there. They worked their butts off to provide for me and my older brother and my older sister. And you know, it was great. I played sports. I really excelled in soccer. I had a lot of, you know, triumphs in that. And, you know, I just started to get into like the high school years, hanging out with, not the greatest crowd, but still hanging out with the great crowd too. But, you know, you start to experiment with, you know, drinking at parties and, you know, being on a sports team and stuff. You like have access to more of the upperclassmen and going to the parties with them, and started drinking and smoking some weed, and escalated to, you know, trying pills and then this and that and the other thing. And before you know it, it just kind of took hold. And that was like what I just wanted to do. You know,
you had some scholarships, correct?
I did. Yeah. I had academic and athletic scholarships to a couple different schools that I was really excited about, but eventually, you know, that didn't happen due to my addiction. I was not able to kind of pull myself out of it enough to fulfill those obligations and to be where I needed to be and, you know, go to these training camps and you know, kind of getting in trouble with the law and all these different things. The schools don't really like that.
Doesn't look so good, especially when they're giving you a free ride.
Yeah, giving you a free ride scholarship. they don't like those imperfections on your record. So those kind of fell away. Yeah. And then I really succeeded in soccer. That was my, you know, main sport. I played some basketball as well, but soccer was where I really excelled. And yeah, I played travel soccer. I played on a lot of club teams. We won, my club team won like our state championship. We were like the best team in the state in our age group. We went to regionals and placed, and you know, I did really well in that. And yeah, like I said, I got some scholarship offers. In high school, I was like all conference, all state, all these, you know, fancy teams and all these accolades and things. But yeah, the addiction took hold and kind of took me completely away from all that. So yeah, it was a crazy transformation from, you know, being this middle-class kid, you know, excelling in sports, getting these offers, to eventually, you know, and we'll get there, being homeless and like just completely out on the streets, you know?
Yeah. I think it can be harder for some where the fall is bigger, you know, where there's more to lose or they've lost more, but it can also be easier for you to see, I need to do something because the fall was so great.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And one of my mindsets of the past was, look at all these things that I lost, you know, like there's no way I can succeed now. I've like lost all these opportunities and things. And I used it as like, oh, pity me, victim, you know, mentality, which really drug me deeper into my addiction, rather than looking at it like, look what my addiction caused. Look what me doing and making these choices did to all these opportunities, right? Which is obviously the more logical way to look at it.
Right, like, right.
Yeah. I did this, you know.
But that is not how any addict views what's happening.
Right.
In
takes a while to get there.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, clients and myself will learn going through this process, is like, you know, the responsibility really lies on me. Like nobody ever held a gun to my head and said, you know, do these drugs, mm-hmm. you know,
throw away your scholarships.
Yeah. I chose consciously, you know, to make those decisions. And yeah, you don't see it that way at the time because the addiction is strong, but, that transformation of mindset, you know, obviously these days is monumental, but, back then it really like held me down, you know?
So how bad did it get? Where were you at prior to coming here?
Yeah, man, it got bad. it was, for a while I was able to live at home, but you know, I was stealing money out of my mom's purse to go score some drugs, or I was stealing quarters and change out of my brother's change jar that he saves up, you know, and cashes in. And I was like doing all these things, you know, stealing from family and from borrowing, quote unquote, from friends. And it got to a point where my family couldn't do it anymore. And eventually I was, you know, kicked out and on the streets, completely homeless. I had a car for a while. I lived in it, and then the car blew up.
Oh no.
There went your house and your car?
They went my house, my transportation. Then I was, you know, book bag, walking through the deep streets of the not so great side of Columbus, Ohio, just kind of by myself, you know, just really out there, you know, trying to muster up the courage to like steal things from a store to go get some money. But I was a terrible thief. I like felt bad. Yeah.
I believe, you know, that. You looked so guilty just walking in.
Yeah. It was, you know, I put this, you know, hard face on, like I was, you know, this hardened like criminal and street guy, but I was, you know, a little kid from the Midwest, like the suburbs,
yeah,
you know,
pale,
middle class, pale,
baby face,
skinny.
Yeah. Yeah.
It got really bad. Just like I said, trying to steal to get drugs, you know, which was wild.
So what was the turning point? What was the final thing?
Oh man. It was kind of a culmination of things, but the quote unquote straw that broke the camel's back was, I, you know, stole a TV from my parents.
Oh no.
And, you know, so obviously they, you know, call the cops and cause they didn't know it was me. And I mean, they knew it was me, but I like said, no, mm-hmm. I didn't do it. You know, of course. But I, you know, I went on a little run. I took the money that I got from that and I went on a little run, and I was, like I said, homeless. I was living in this abandoned house, just complete, like you walk into this front door and there's stairs that lead to the basement to the right. And right at the top of the stairs, there's just a huge hole in the floor.
Oh, no.
You can see to the basement. Like, this house was abandoned for a reason.
Yeah.
liability written all over
it. But for me, luckily, in the living room area, there was a little couch, and it was disgusting.
Oh, boy.
But that's where I slept. You know, I stayed in this abandoned house, and that's where I was at. And one night, I just, like, I don't know why, but I just started walking around the streets, like, you know, at night. I had my book bag. I was probably, like, trying to figure out a way to, like, find some more money or something.
For sure.
And I was just walking around, and I was thinking, like, holy crap. Like, it just kind of dawned on me.
This sucks.
Yeah. It dawned. And I hadn't taken a shower in God knows how long, and hadn't eaten in God knows how long, and, you know, all these things. And it just kind of dawned on me, just hit me, like, where I was, right? Like, what I was actually doing at that moment, walking around aimless, nowhere to go, like, nothing. Mm-hmm. And I went back to the abandoned house. And if anybody that, you know, has done drugs or, you know, whatever knows, like, the emotions really aren't there until, like, you're coming down or you're, like, off it or whatever. But I was, like, somehow my emotions just hit me and I just started crying, and which was crazy.
You, like, don't while feel being emotion, under the influence?
While I was under the influence.
Gotcha.
Which
it's was, when you know they're real.
Yeah. It's when you know, like, something's not right, you know? And I eventually felt, like I said, I was under the influence, so I fell asleep, but I woke up the next morning. Well, it's probably like afternoon. So woke up and I called my mom. She was at work. I called my mom and was like, and this wasn't my first rodeo or go around at trying to, like, reach out for help, but I called her and I broke down, and she was at work, and she was, I feel so bad. She was crying at work.
Yeah.
I was like, I just need help. I don't know what it is, but something's got to change, or, like, I'm not going to be around very long, you know, just, like, terrifying for her to hear as a mom, obviously. Absolutely. But also that's really the way I felt, you know? So she immediately left work, right? And was on her way. She was going to come pick me up from this abandoned house, but I didn't want her to see that. So I was like, there's a gas station down the street I had to meet me at. And so she left work, and she got there, and she's like, I got a place for you to go.
Oh, wow.
They had been, like, planning for this moment for me to reach out, I imagine.
Okay, that makes sense.
This is, like, too fast to have, like, options, you know?
Yeah, I was like, damn.
Yeah. That's awesome. But I'll never forget this. This was, like, a huge turning point. I got in the car with my mom, and she just looked at me with this, like, look on her face of pure, like, fear, but disgust. And she said, "You effing stink."
Oh.
I was like, oh my God. And it, like I said, I hadn't showered in God knows how long. Oh. And that just hit me to the core, you know?
Yeah.
And that was the start of my journey. I was on a plane to California next morning. Like,
you
very
showered
next
before
morning.
You got on the plane, right?
She took me to my grandparents' house because I was not welcome at my house at that time. So we went all the way down, you know, almost an hour south to my grandparents to spend the night and to get a shower.
Just so you could shower and eat.
Just so I could shower. And I didn't even think I ate, but yeah. And my mom and grandma went to the store and got me, like, a new pack of underwear and white t-shirts so that I could, you know, have something to wear that wasn't soiled, you know?
Dang, Gordon.
Yeah. That was where I was at, you know,
and then
7 years ago.
And then you showed up to us, what, like a whole probably 98 pounds. Like, imagine
you're soaking wet.
Yeah, soaking wet, super emaciated, super sick. And you've been with us ever since.
Right. Yeah. And so, like I said, you know, to see the transformation from that to running the finances.
Dude, who would have thought?
Who would have ever thought?
Who would have ever thought? Yeah. You're also married.
Right. Yeah. I'm married. Happily married now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you've been allowed back at your family's house?
We go a couple times a year and we stay, and they even, like, let me borrow their cars to, you know.
Wow.
Our relationship is amazing now. Like, they, our relationship with my parents, my grandparents, my siblings, which is a whole nother thing, but my nieces, like, everything is wonderful these days.
It's a process, though. Yeah. I mean, I think we need to remember it. Sometimes it takes years to build that trust back. Oh, yeah. It's not like you came to rehab and they're like, oh, you're great, come back. It's like it literally took you years to gain that trust back and be able to visit and be able to be in their house without them there. Like it's a process.
Exactly. And especially like them being so far away was what it took. Maybe I wasn't like right in their face. So it was, they were only like getting communication from me, right? So like, they're like, I'm only hearing these things from you and you've lied to me before. So it took, you know, longer in that
even
regard
longer,
too.
Because they're not like seeing the physical change.
Right. Or... And then they came out and visited. And I think that that really helped a lot to see like, okay, like he actually looks like Jordan, you know, he doesn't look like whatever that was.
Stinko.
You know? Stinko. Yeah. Oh man. I'll never forget that moment. It was that like... was a spike right in the heart.
Yeah, I love that. When your mom, like, that was your button, you know, it's like stinking.
Yeah,
it like just that just me. Tore you up, you know.
Right, and coming from my mom, who like
unconditional. Parents are pretty unconditional.
Like she has gone to bat for me more times than I'd be willing to count, you know. Mm. And for her to just like have that look and just to say, "Oh man, it hit me." Yeah.
So well, hey, I'm glad she said it. I'm glad she helped. Yeah. You know, pull you out of the mud, dude.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, and after you get here, it's, you know, you're still doing the work.
Right.
You know, you're still going through all the steps and, you know, confronting all the bad things you've done and making amends for them and that whole thing. It's not like, you know, you go to rehab and suddenly magically everything's fixed. There's a lot of work that you've been doing too.
A lot of work. Yeah. And like I said earlier, when that mindset of like, I lost all these things, you know, look what happened to me, and having that realization that like, no, I did that. And now on the other end, like looking where I'm at now and like, you know, I did that, you know, like
I did
that too. Like choices, right? Like, you know, perspective, you make different choices, you get different outcomes. And like, you know, I did this. I'm here because it's a lot of work and you put the work in. But at the end of the day, you could say like, you know, I did that.
Absolutely.
Which is powerful. Yeah.
Wow.
One of the things I say, I don't say it to everybody. Well, now I'm saying it to everybody, but is being a drug addict is the best thing that ever happened to me because it put me on this path where 26 years later, I'm still here. And I have no idea what path I would have taken or could have taken or even wanted to take when I started using. And so, you know, for a lot of us, it ends up being that silver lining. It's the good thing that puts us where we need to be, helping the people we need to be helping.
Right. Yeah. Looking, being where I'm at now and looking back, like, what led me here? If I could go back in time, like everyone says, if I go back, I'd change so much. It's like, ah, man, I would probably try, you know, but I'm so grateful for all those trials and tribulations that led me on this path of life. Right. If I'd have never moved to California, I'd have never met my wife. I'd have never met you guys who are my, like some of my closest friends, and like never been had the opportunity to work in a company that works so hard to change people's lives. I'd have never had this, you know? Yeah, who knows what I would have done.
Right.
I didn't even know what I wanted to do. So
maybe soccer for a while, but how long is that career?
Right.
Yeah.
Was I like going pro? Probably not.
Little boy from Ohio.
Yeah,
now.
I mean, I don't know. But it would have been a completely different life path for sure. So
for sure. Yeah. And you're in school.
Right. I'm back in school now, yeah.
Probably almost done now. You've been in school forever, man.
I'm slow rolling it now.
Well, but you work a full-time job and you have a wife and you have some sort of like social.
Right.
It's a much slower road.
Right.
That's very true.
Right. But I'm steadily working towards it. It's a goal I set, and you know, I like to accomplish the goals I set out for myself. So I might be slow rolling it a little bit, but it will get done. And I will see it through. So
hoping to accelerate that next semester, take on some more, work harder. Now's the perfect time since the world's kind of shut down. It's like, might as well go all in on your education.
Right. Exactly. So
damn. Well, Jordan, I'm proud of you, man. I'm happy you did that.
Thanks,
you know, obviously, you know that, but it just had to be said, you know, hearing your story and, you know. It's Jordan's one of those guys that we're always joking around, you know. You're not always serious with him, even though it's not okay. It's totally okay to be serious with Jordan too, you know. But I don't know. I just feel like I need to name that and say I'm proud of you, dude, for how far you come and that as a company and as a friend, we're extremely grateful to have you, man.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, when I think about core values, hardworking and fun, you know, definitely fun.
That's Jordan.
Yeah,
that is Jordan.
We have so much fun. It's all about games and sports, and you know, we definitely get the fun in. But you're also very hardworking. You put in a lot of time and a lot of effort, and you always have. And we love that about you.
Yeah, I'm just grateful to be here and be a part of it. You know, so.
Hey, absolutely, man. So. Why are you still here? What keeps you hanging around Elevate? Why do you do what you do?
Well, like I said, you know, coming from my background, my own struggles and things that I had mentioned already, and being where I'm at today, you know, seeing that lives do change, right? Like people can change, outcomes change, situations change. It's not, you don't have to be stuck. Right. And that's exactly what we do here at Elevate is change perspectives so that people see like I can do that. Right. Mm-hmm. Change does happen. Look at me. Look at you. Look at all of us. Right. Like it is true. Don't let anybody ever say that like you can't change your outcomes. Right. And to be a part of that change and that journey in so many people's lives on a yearly basis, on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis. Right. There's nothing else that I would rather do than be able to be a part of that that journey for people and to be a part of this organization that really like does that. Like that is our goal. That is our purpose. We do everything that we do for that purpose. And that's just a powerful thing, you know, and that's what continues to drive me, even in, you know, finance where I'm sorting through numbers and it's, you know, not the most exciting thing in the world, but
definitely not the most fun thing.
Yeah. But that's what keeps me going and keeps me driven, you know. So
well said, Jordan.
Yeah. Would you say that your passion for working here and the purpose here is pretty equal to your passion for baby goats?
The final question.
I had to get it in there.
I would say it's pretty close. Yeah.
Jordan loves baby goats. We send baby goat videos, calendars. Yeah. Like it's a
anything
thing.
Goats.
Yeah. Angie gets me a baby goat calendar every year. I get to hang it up. It's hung up in my new office now. Yes. And they're just so funny. You know, you look at it and he's just sitting there and then you look away. And then 2 seconds later, you look back and he's like on the roof of his house chewing up a water bottle. It's like, what in the world, you know? you can't script it. They're just funny.
You can't beat it, dude.
Yeah. So
well, Jordan, dude, thank you so much for being on the show, man. It's been a pleasure. We knew it would be. You're just a light, dude, a ray of sunshine and one of our best employees and one of my best friends. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Appreciate you guys having me. It was a gas.
It was a gas.
Jeremy would say.
Yeah. Well, we were trying to, for myself, I was like, how do I get Jordan here? What do we talk about? Finance is so boring. Like, how do we, how do we, you know, make a show out of this? So I think we did a pretty good job and highlighted you. And I especially loved your journey because, you know, it was pretty dark. And you came to us at what, like 20? It was
22, I think.
Yeah, 22. Pretty just young.
Barely 22, yeah.
Yeah. So to see where you're at now compared to then and you know, it's anybody could do this. Like, it's not just you obviously put in the work, but it shows that change can happen even in the worst of situations.
Absolutely. Like I said, it does happen. It can happen and it will happen with the right work, you know. So, yeah.
Right on.
Absolutely. Amen. There we go. All right. Well, thanks for being on the show. And we're going to sign off, Jordan.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Jordan.
All right, guys, that's our show for today. We hope you found some value from listening. And if you did, please share with someone you know or love. You can find us on social media. We are at Elevate Addiction Services.
And if you or a loved one are struggling with addiction,